ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
In a tiny Victorian town, the football club isn't just a weekend ritual.
It's country footy, you get there really early, you leave late.
But then, one day, something happens.
In the back of a caravan, just over the road from this footy club.
Once I realised what was going to happen, it was not good.
And suddenly, everyone must pick a side.
I just felt angry. Those folks were meant to be my mates.
Hometown Boys, a new series by Background Briefing. Listen now on the ABC Listen app.
He said he needed it, suggested he could buy it. He threatened tariffs on nations that didn't support his quest to take it. Then he dropped them and ruled out using military force. Donald Trump's approach to Greenland might be erratic, but it's all in line with his foreign policy aim to reorder the world. Today, Monica Duffy-Toft, Professor of International Politics at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, on Trump's bid to control the Western Hemisphere. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
For decades, other administrations have neglected or even contributed to these growing security threats in the Western Hemisphere. Under the Trump administration, we are reasserting American power in a very powerful way.
We're going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. What a beautiful name.
My administration will be reclaiming the Panama Canal.
All the United States is asking for is a place called Greenland. This enormous, unsecured island is actually part of North America, on the northern frontier of the Western Hemisphere. That's our territory.
Monica, President Trump began 2026 by threatening to take control of Greenland. He's captured Venezuela's leader. He's bombed South American boats. At the start of 2025, he renamed the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. Just tell me, given all of that, how would you describe his approach to foreign policy during what is now his first year in office?
What I would say is that I think what we're witnessing is a very strong, muscular type of foreign policy. And it was one that was outlined pretty clearly in the new national security document, National Security Strategy 2025 in the autumn. And in that document, they said that the administration was going to reassert U.S. dominance in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes.
And I think, you know, the changing of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, targeting the Panama Canal early, and then also the utterances about Greenland. Mm. And then I think where it shifted, you're right, is January, where we actually saw the use of force, an attack on Venezuela, and then the kidnapping of its president to the United States. And so it shifted from that tacit to the overt coercion. They've demonstrated through Venezuela the willingness to use force. This is an administration that's sort of gone into hyperdrive on the use of military force and coercion to try to press their way.
And it's become clear, and this is what you've written about, that Donald Trump really now wants to divide the world into spheres of influence, that there would be three main powers, that is, the United States, China, and Russia.
Yeah, so I think in an ideal world, he'd love to have the global landscape, but I think he recognizes, honestly, he would like to be a global leader. Look, he's got this new peace board where he's asking countries to commit $1 billion and sort of circumventing the United Nations. But the reality is we do have China sitting there emerging, if not now a full peer competitor. It's on the brink of becoming a peer competitor. And then, of course, Russia is still wreaking havoc in Ukraine, and it is nuclear armed. armed, and Putin has made it clear that parts of the former Soviet area should be within the sphere of Russian Federation space. And so these three gentlemen are sort of thinking about how they can extend their influence within their regions. Mm. And the United States is doing it in the Western Hemisphere quite blatantly. Putin has already done it in Ukraine, you know, and he's still there. There's talks of absorbing Belarus. And then President Xi, as we know, has been sort of expanding Chinese influence largely economically, but then also militarily and through coercion as well. And he believes that China should have say throughout Asia. So the spheres, you know, that's what they're trying to do, is so that they can control that and sort of elbow each other out of those regions. And Trump's been very explicit, by the way. He has told the Russians and the Chinese they cannot be in Venezuela. Oh, and by the way, we don't want you in the Atlantic or in the Caribbean. Adios. Please leave.
And this is what, of course, the Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney was warning of during his speech last week in Davos. He said the old world order is not coming back.
It seems that every day we're reminded that we live in an era of great power rivalry, that the rules-based order is fading, that the strong can do what they can and the weak must suffer what they must.
And also the French president, Emmanuel Macron, he was warning of this new imperialism, that it cannot happen.
It's as well a shift towards a world without rules, where international law is trampled underfoot, and where the only law that seems to matter is that of the strongest, and imperial ambitions are resurfacing.
Yes, exactly. It's a new form of imperialism where you sort of abrogate the sovereignty. Spheres of influence, you don't necessarily take over the full sovereignty, right? States still have some room for maneuver. Whereas with imperialism, you have a metropole, and the metropole determines the foreign policy, who you can trade with. So it's a little bit deeper. I don't think we're there. The question is whether the middle and the smaller powers, how much room for maneuver do they have, right? Yeah. The other thing with, you know, with the United States, and I have to say Americans feel this way too, Sam, is this going to continue even after the Trump administration? How permanent is this? Because it is such a shift in U.S. foreign policy and national security policy. We could talk about domestic politics as well, but it's a real shift. And the question is it going to take hold such that it becomes more permanent?
So, Monica, this is Donald Trump wanting to change the world order, an order, of course, that's been in place since the end of World War II. Mm-hmm. Most recently, of course, he spoke about this after the capture of the Venezuelan president. He was then talking about the Monroe Doctrine, which he has renamed the Donroe Doctrine.
And the Monroe Doctrine is a big deal, but we've superseded it by a lot, by a real lot. They now call it the Donroe Document. I don't know.
It's a play on words, I gather, but what's that all about?
So the Monroe Doctrine was a doctrine that was implemented in the 19th century, and what it did was it sort of advanced the idea under James Monroe that the United States had the right to hemispheric dominance from east to west, you know, from all the way east, all the way to the west. And the idea was to keep the European powers out, like, this is not your sphere. Again, it's a sphere. And so Donald Trump, very clever, we know he's very clever with his terminology, talks about the Donroe doctrine. And in this case, we already control east to west. We don't have Canada, although he'd like that to be the 51st state. He's warned Mexico. He's also warned Colombia. Mm. But the idea here is that everyone is expected to comply, right, with what the United States wants.
Yes.
And that if they don't, the United States will enforce that. And so it will come in. So it reduces the capacity of states to act. President Trump, under his Donroe Doctrine, he's making dominance now that declared policy, and he's backing it up with the use of force.
Right, yeah. So in a sense, the capture of the Venezuelan president was actually a test of this doctrine.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I think what President Trump and his administration is hoping, And it seems to be policies is that by getting Venezuela to fall, or Maduro to leave, and then getting control of Venezuelan oil, then Cuba will be next because Cuba's economy is so dependent on Venezuelan oil. And Maduro was bolstered by many Cubans in his security apparatus. And so he's not done. The administration doesn't seem to be done yet. So that idea of the Donroe Doctrine and these dominoes, they're using force, they're using coercion, they're using compellence, right, to get these states and these statesmen to fall in line.
All right. Well, Monica, let's consider then whether Trump could actually pull this new world order off, and if he did, whether it would actually work. You say there are a number of reasons, three main reasons, why it absolutely cannot work.
Yeah, today, the one that we look and we turn to is Yalta during World War II, where you had UK Prime Minister Churchill, then you had US President Roosevelt, and then Soviet leader Stalin, you know, negotiate agreement because they were in the midst of World War II and they had all seen World War I, right? And so they're like, oh my gosh, we do not want a third world war. And the nuclear weapons hadn't been detonated yet, but they were on the horizon. And so here are these three men saying, okay, how can we guarantee stability across the major powers? And so they decided to create spheres of influence, but it was in the heart of war. Today, we don't have that, right? This is one statesman across each region doing this and pressing this for a variety of reasons, right? That do not have to do with trying to keep the world safe from extinction because of a nuclear holocaust. Second is the leadership. And we've already talked about President Trump, but we didn't say that, you know, he clearly admires Chinese President Xi Jinping and President Vladimir Putin of Russia because as autocrats, they're able to get things done, right? And so they're advancing and maintaining their power through state power. They've revised history in ways that sort of demand this muscular foreign policy. So they each, in their own way, want to make their countries great again. And the last, though, why I think it's not going to work is that it's not enough to talk about geography anymore. We could talk about the Western Hemisphere, but you know, the world is connected much more so economically and then through technology, right? And so the idea that it's only going to be about land and control of land, that is just sort of a very arcane way of thinking about the way in which the world works today. So all three men, statesmen, don't seem to have an appreciation of just how interconnected their economies are.
All right. So, Monica, Trump wants the world in these three spheres. So Russia, China, and America. Just tell me, I'm gathering Australia would be under China, and that wouldn't really work, would it? Because we have a really strong military alliance with the United States, but we're pretty close economically to China.
Yes. So this is, Sam, it's a conundrum. And actually, I have a piece in Foreign Affairs last March where I talk about Australia explicitly. And what's nice is Australia is pretty isolated, right, out in the middle of the ocean.
Yes.
And it's a wealthy country. It's a large country, a smart, well-educated country. And so it's just going to have to play it smart. And I hate to say that. And they're going to have to hedge between the two because you're literally between China and the U.S. And in a paradoxical way, I think you need both of them for trade and for other things. And then I would hope that the United States, that we have some sort of correction down the road. But my fear is that so much trust has been broken that it's going to take a long time.
So, Monica, if he does continue down this path, Donald Trump,
yes,
just tell me how detrimental, how dangerous could this be?
I think it can be pretty dangerous. I do. I'm very nervous. So I think it could be dangerous because I'm not sure this president and this administration fully appreciates sort of what they're unraveling. And what they're doing is they're opening up a whole pile of risks that I'm not sure they're even aware of, because we could just talk about nuclear saber rattling. You know, Putin had been doing it 2 years ago in the war in Ukraine, got shut down, but I'm not sure they have that memory. So back to Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin. I mean, these were men who had just seen the horrors of war twice. Trump, I just don't think he thinks about it in the same way. You know, like it's transactional. Oh, there's going to be collateral damage, but not realizing that you're really playing with fire here. And so it's an unraveling of a system that was functioning pretty well. Mm. And so I think they're not sure of the risks that they're creating here as a result. The safeguards are coming off. And that's not the way to conduct statesmanship, and it's not a way to sort of set up stability in the international system when the stakes are really, really high.
Monica Duffy-Toft is a professor of international politics and the director of the Center for Strategic Studies at the Fletcher School at Tufts University in Boston. This episode was produced by Sydney Pede and Sam Dunn. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.